I wish I was more involved in the bill earlier, to tell you the truth, because I think there's some red flags in it, and I know why it makes people nervous. But it's basically gross misrepresentation from the anti-growth people down there that are stirring people up. They're saying it's a big mandate. You're going to force me to build housing, you know, in my backyard, which is not what the strategy is at all.
Governor Lamont talking about the massive housing bill that is probably the most significant housing legislation in years, and certainly since we really found that we have a housing crisis in this nation, including right here in Connecticut. He hasn't signed it into law just yet. He is really combing through this document, which did pass the House and the Senate before the session wrapped up this week. Joining us now to talk about this, one of our housing experts on the show, Renee Dobis, who is here, the president of the Connecticut Housing Partners, which is a nonprofit that's been creating workforce affordable housing in the state for over 30 years. Renee, what were your initial thoughts on this legislation?
Well, I was very pleased. Good morning, everyone, because they really took a few bold moves that we've been waiting for them to do for quite some time. You know, the fact that they're really trying to create additional pathways for affordable housing to go into all communities, the fact that they're trying to reduce planning and zoning restrictions in communities, like, for instance, taking a commercial building and converting it to affordable housing so that planning and zoning can't stop that activity, I think is really important. And, you know, when you really think about it, the state is asking every municipality to have 10% of your 10% of your housing be affordable. Think about that. That is a tiny number. So if you're in a community that has 1,500 homes, we're talking 150 units. They're not being asked to do a lot, but the resistance against it is just amazing to me. So I think I was really pleased. You know, nothing's perfect. I hope the governor signs it. I'm sure he's looking at it critically, because the area of the state that has been pushing back the hardest is also an area where he lives, in Fairfield County. So I'm sure he wants to make sure that his constituents are happy with him, maybe if he's going to try to run for a third term. But I'm very happy, and I'm going to try to advocate even harder. And you know, and I can't thank the state Senate enough. I think it's a great step forward.
So, Renee, I want to talk about some of the concerns that are, as you mentioned, specifically coming from Fairfield County. And again, there are a lot of opinions on the matter, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. One of the things that it seems like from these communities, a Fairfield, a Westport, others in lower Fairfield County, has been, you know, and it was interesting because I had this conversation with Stratford's mayor yesterday, that they have complexes that would be considered affordable housing, but are not under the current state statute. So my understanding is this law, actually, if it is signed into law, would now say, oh, that actually does fall under what would be like an 830G. So, for example, Stratford was saying that Success Village, an over 900-unit complex between Bridgeport and Stratford, that's never been considered affordable housing. But anybody with a brain would tell you that that is affordable housing. But it has not been looked at as that way until this legislation. So I do think, like the governor was saying, I do think in some regard, this will sort of, you know, also tell a story of maybe the fact that there are communities in Fairfield County that have been doing their job, but they're being told they haven't been. I don't know if you agree with that.
No, I think that's an excellent point, because historically, affordable housing has only been looked at as a rental. Success Village is ownership,
right?
And I think it should be looked at. And I think that's a very important thing to do, because it is available. It is there. People are living there. So it should be counted. And I agree with that wholeheartedly.
So I'm curious, Renee, because I know you and your team have done projects, certainly in recent years, in Bridgeport. It was interesting to me that Bridgeport, their senators were actually against the bill. And probably the biggest reason was because of the parking. I'd love to get your take on the parking requirements and really get your take on this, because one of the biggest things that is, again, controversial is, do you have the parking allotted for that complex that's being built? But a lot of projects have actually been stalled or stopped completely because developers don't want to have these massive parking lots. I'd love to get your take on this.
Well, I I think the parking is, the way I'm interpreting it, it's mainly closer to the transit-oriented districts, and that parking is probably less required if you're near a transit-oriented district, and busing includes that as well. And right now, most of the municipalities' parking zoning is about 1.5 spaces per unit. That's how it's calculated. It does take up a lot of space. And also what it does is it limits the number of units you can put on the piece of property that you're developing on because you have to reserve so much space for parking. So I'm not opposed to it. I think we have to kind of wait and see how this kind of formulates in time. But I do think it's a way to create some density on the parcel of land that you're developing on so that you can get more units.
So we have Renee Dobis here of Connecticut Housing Partners, again, a nonprofit that has been creating workforce affordable housing for over 30 years. For you specifically, Renee, in your entity, certainly, you know, can you talk about how this bill would impact you guys? Would it make it easier? I know one of the things you and I talk about a lot is the conversations you do have with municipalities and even just trying to help them to understand what kind of housing you would want to create. And again, these are, you know, CHP is right here in Connecticut. So we're not talking about out-of-state developers. You're talking about people who live and work in these communities. Do you feel like right. this legislation, you know, is going to make those conversations a lot easier between your entity and municipalities?
Yes, I do, because I think there's real pressure being placed on the municipalities to focus on this. Because, you know, we have to remember and educate people. We have the most constrained housing market in the entire nation. If you recall a few months back, I was talking about a study that was talking about that the state of Connecticut is the worst state in the entire country when it comes to having affordable housing and diversity of housing. And I think there's a little bit of a carrot that's being placed in front of municipalities as well that, you know, meet the 10%. You get to the 10% and you're going to get a little bit more money coming into your municipality through state government. And I think that's an excellent way to deal with that as well. So if we want our state to grow and have economic prosperity, every municipality has to contribute. You can't just have it be certain municipalities contribute and then all the others say, no, we're not going to. We all have to do this together. It's extremely important.
We're talking about the massive housing bill that passed the House and the Senate during this legislative session here in Connecticut. It is the most impactful housing bill we could be passing into law. Governor has to still sign it, and he plans to do so. He really is looking through the language of it, though, and specifically how it could impact Fairfield County. Renee Dobis is here from Connecticut Housing Partners. Renee, question for you. If this bill it instead was an 830G reform, like we really looked at 830G and we fixed it, do you think there'd be more people on board with it who are against it right now?
Geez, I'm not sure about that. I don't know why they just do not want to touch 830G. I think what they were trying to do was break down some barriers so that it's easier for developers to utilize 830G. For instance, they want to try to create in this bill priority housing development zones, so it sets minimum densities, and these zones would be as a right to build affordable housing in these different municipalities. So they're just trying to create additional pathways so that 830G can be more easily utilized. That's how I'm interpreting this.
I feel like that's the I think that's the problem. Again, I'm no doctor, right? I can't diagnose why, you know, some people do or don't like it. I think there are, you know, reasons that are pretty legitimate for why people are concerned. But, you know, when the governor says there's a lot of fear mongering, there's demagoguing. I mean, he said those things on my show when we talked about this. I think a huge reason is because we are still not willing to touch 830G. And I probably sound like a broken record, so please forgive me. But it doesn't to me when you talk about a 5-month session and, you know, what started off as a homeless study, 11 sentence homeless study turning into a 90 plus page bill. And when you look at some of the things that are being talked about, and not one sentence of it is saying, hey, let's actually look at the archaic laws on the books that are making developers richer and are not really including our local zoning and planning, and could be looked at as sort of undermining local zoning, a one size fits all. I think that's where these headlines come from, because 830G essentially, nothing changed with it. So this is being added on top of it. And sort of some fixes, like you said, there are definitely some fixes to what the current statutes look like. But 830G didn't change at all. And so that's why I was wondering if you felt like, you know, while there's a lot of, it sounds like, in your opinion, good things coming out of this bill, more good than bad, if the 830G portion, the fact that that's not in it at all, is really what's going to make people divided on this.
Right. So my opinion is based on the fact that I'm a real estate developer for affordable housing. But on the other side, I do understand municipalities and planning and zoning folks are feeling like that their hands are tied a little bit. And I can appreciate that distinction. But I think they still have within their power to plan in their communities. And part of that planning needs to include embracing affordable housing and including affordable housing in their community, as opposed to a lot of the planning and zoning rules right now are excluding planning, excluding affordable housing. And that's why they get whacked in the side of the head with 830G when a developer comes in. So they need to plan for affordable housing in their community so that they can control it and also meet the needs of the state.
Do you think, too, Renee, going back to the example of Stratford, so again, I don't know every municipality's threshold, what they're, you know, because everybody is different, right? All 169 are different, and certainly, you know, how many have train stations, bus stations, what have you. I know it's different for every municipality, but say you are a Stratford, and now that you've got properties already under your belt that weren't considered affordable housing, but now they are, now they would be if you went to the state and you're like, hey, here's why. And again, you have Mayor Hoydick, who's a Republican, who said, I don't love the bill, but I do love the fact that I can go back and say, well, this actually is affordable housing, like a Success Village. And Democratic State Rep Joe Gresko saying, yeah, we can do that. We can do that, which would, you know, not put Stratford on the radar per se. I mean, do you feel like we're sort of, the pushback is before we even know if, in fact, you're going to have to create more? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
I think I understand. So you're basically saying that if we're going to be adding affordable housing that already exists under the ownership side of it, that they've met their 10% threshold, so therefore they don't have to build additional affordable housing.
Correct.
So,
like they may not even know. Yeah. They might have already met the threshold now with this new legislation.
Yeah. It's a possibility, but I'm going to guess that most municipalities, even by adding some of those units, will likely not have met their 10%.
Okay.
I don't think there's that many units of in Success Village on the Stratford side. Most of them are on the Bridgeport side. So, Stratford's a pretty large municipality. So I don't know what their percentage is, but I can't imagine that would have them meet their 10%.
Right. I guess it's more of the question of just in general, you know, are towns panicking before they actually even know, you know, that maybe they are closer to the threshold than they realize, because some of these properties were not considered, you know, 830G compliant, essentially. That's kind of my question.
Right. It's possible. It's very true. But the municipality should be happy about that if they can tell that they've met their 10%, because they're going to receive some additional funding through the state. They're going to get a little bit of bonus on some of the grant money that they receive. So all municipalities should be striving to meet the 10%.
Well, and so the reason I asked that, Renee, is exactly what you just, you know, led to, which is one of the other big reasons it seems like these towns and cities, especially in Fairfield County, don't want to do it, is because a lot of the grant money is going to our cities like a Bridgeport, you know, a Hartford or a Bridgeport. So they don't even qualify for these grants. And so maybe if they reach that, now you qualify for these grants and you can get more on board with these types of projects. Again, I know I'm probably coming at it from a very elementary level, but I'm just trying to kind of work through, you know, kind of finding the middle ground here, sort of like what the governor is trying to do, I think, with this massive bill.
Yes, I think so. But I do think it's time that we have to focus on this. because, as I say before, people focus on homelessness, which is true. Homelessness is growing in the state of Connecticut, but this is an economic issue. We can't attract new businesses into the state. Our workers have no place to live affordably. This is truly an economic issue that the whole state has to participate in if we want to thrive and be healthy. And you know what? And who wants to be number one on the list of being bad in having housing, a decent housing stock? We need to get off that list. So, you know, that study alone should be telling us that we have a problem. So we all have to participate and get off that list.
Renee Dobis, I always appreciate having these conversations. Thank you so much for your insight. And I know we'll talk again really soon.
Okay, thanks so much.